Blog Talk Radio.
You're broken down and tired of living life on the merry-go-round, and you can't find a fighter, but I see it in you, so we're gonna walk it out. Ooh, mountains, we're gonna walk it out, and ooh, mountains. And I'll rise up, I'll rise like the day. I'll rise up, I'll rise unafraid. I'll rise up, and I'll do it 1,008 times again. And I'll rise up, I'll like the waves. I'll rise up, in spite of the ache. I'll rise up, and I'll do it 1,008. Silence is a quiet, and it feels like it's getting hard to breathe. And I know you feel like dying, but I promise we'll take the world to its feet. Move mountains, bring it to its feet. Move mountains. That we have each other.
Good afternoon, this is Tracy, and yes, we have actually made it back to the airwaves. I want to say a real quick thank you to all our listeners that have been so supportive of me, telling me you miss me, and more importantly, sending get well wishes. As you know, I just had the second surgery on the arm, and so I'm just, you know, bouncing back, and I thought it was the perfect time to jump in and just start doing the show again, because we miss it as much as you guys do. And our guest today, I just can't tell you what an amazing woman I happen to think she is. And I also think that, you know, sometimes you can measure when a person is doing something right when you have the NRA haters coming out of the woodwork ever since I announced this guest. But we have Shannon Watt from Moms Demand Action, and we're going to talk more about that, but I don't want to waste her time. I want to go ahead and bring Shannon on. Good afternoon, Shannon. How are you?
Hi there. Good. How are you?
I'm good. It's so good to be speaking to you. We've been emailing and private messaging back and forth about getting you on the show, and it's finally here. I'm really glad. you were a busy woman during the election and inaugural sadness events, and nothing happy about that day. But
no, that is very true.
Yeah, it's definitely I want to get your take on a lot of what you're seeing happening now within the gun safety, gun sense, gun control. A lot of people use different ways to describe it, but what are you seeing happening right now now that he's been in office 2 weeks?
Well, the National Rifle Association was the largest outside donor to Donald Trump's campaign, and they're going to expect a return on investment. And we have seen them already working to collect that. I think a good example was the fact that the chief lobbyist for the NRA, Wayne LaPierre, was sitting next to Donald Trump yesterday during a strategy session about the confirmation process for the new Supreme Court justice. So you had a multimillionaire gun lobbyist sitting next to the president. That's not really draining the swamp. And then you had yesterday Sean Spicer imply during a presser that the president was working on an executive order to overturn gun-free school zones in America, which would allow guns in K-12 schools. And then today, the House is expected to vote to try and overturn the new Social Security Administration rule that was established by the Obama administration, which basically just says that if you are severely mentally ill, your information should go into the NICS system because you are a prohibited buyer of guns. And the NRA wants to immediately overturn that regulation. So I would say they are definitely omnipresent.
Definitely. I did a little research, as I always tend to do. And, I really would like to get your input and just have a discussion about this. So one of the big statistics that's always stuck out to me, and I mean, I know it's gone up since 2013, but that was the only stats I could find that were – I'll just read this real quick. From 2004 to 2013, the CDC, Center for Disease Control and Prevention, and the State Department reported there were 313 American deaths by terrorism compared to 316,545 American deaths by guns. That's a 1,000-to-1 ratio of gun to terror death, where the numbers, outrange 30,000 plus gun deaths per year, versus just to round down 31 terror deaths. So, why on earth are we spending more time, energy, and money on preventing an extremely rare occurrence in terrorism than we would on a rather regular occurrence in gun violence? And how do you feel we best, how do we best laid plans here, I guess, after that trend and numbers?
Well, you know, I think some of it is psychological. In many ways, we've become numb in America to this problem, which is actually a crisis. And so therefore, you know, psychologically, terrorism seems more imminent, more threatening, more likely, and yet 33,000 Americans are shot and killed every year, hundreds of thousands more are injured, and every single day more than 90 Americans are killed. So this is an ever-present danger in our country, and it's also a danger that can be addressed. You know, when we look at the states, so just to step back for a second so your listeners understand, background checks are required on licensed gun sales in this country. So if you go to Walmart, you have to have a background check. But if you buy a gun online or you buy a gun at a gun show, you do not have to have a background check because those are private sales. So millions of guns are sold without a background check every year in this country. And in the states that have done what Congress won't do, which is to close that loophole, you see gun violence reduced significantly. In fact, it's almost cut in half across the board when you look at suicides and domestic homicides and civilian shootings of police and gun trafficking and mass shootings. All of these things are cut almost in half when you put laws in place that require a very simple procedure, which is already in effect through license sales, which is a background check. So we know laws work. But the other thing we have that's much different than other developed nations is that we have a gun lobby. And we've talked a little bit already about the NRA, but, you know, their whole goal is to loosen laws, to undo laws, to make it as easy as possible for someone to have a gun, no questions asked. And, you know, that is what has led to the fact that you are 25 times more likely to be shot and killed in America than any other developed nation.
And, you know, I guess I'll just jump kind of to this question. How is it, you know, because we've discussed this on the show, and, you know, most of our listeners are progressive, and they are definitely, you know, with both you and I on you know, this topic. But just for everybody at home, like, how would you, you know, how do you explain to them, you know, or explain to people who are more anti what we're trying to do when, you know, we see these statistics all the time coming in from crime in comparable countries like the U.S. And they're so low. I mean, I mean, we know why, but I would like to hear from you. But, you know, why do you think we have such a hard time, you know, not being able to match these statistics? You know, every country in Europe and Japan, you know, so many places have the numbers are just insane compared to ours. As far as
well, I've had these circular discussions with lawmakers for 4 years now, and, you know, the answer to that question is always the Second Amendment, right? So the idea that we have a Second Amendment, which was established, you know, long before the evolution of gun technology in this country, and the idea that that somehow still applies verboten to 2017, and also, you know, the fact that they do talk about a well-regulated militia, but that tends to be all overlooked because the gun lobby, and the NRA specifically, has for 30 years held this talking point of any kind of regulation of the Second Amendment is an attempt to take away your rights. And, you know, that's completely a misnomer. It's false. You know, our organization, for example, we do not support a ban of guns. We support the Second Amendment. Many of our members are married to gun owners or they are gun owners.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the idea that the Second Amendment and responsibility can't go hand in hand is something that has been sold to the American public for decades. And our organization is only 4 years old. We really are the first grassroots movement in this space. that is financed and can go toe-to-toe with the NRA, and we have, and we have beaten them quite a bit in the states and with companies. But, you know, there is no good answer to why don't we take care of this problem and why do we have such a high rate of gun violence compared to other nations if you are on the other side. You have to say, it's almost like climate change where the science is in. Now, you can say you don't support what the science dictates, but you can't argue whether the science is true or not. And the same is with gun violence. The data is in. We know what is causing our problem. We know how to solve it. But our lawmakers who are beholden to the gun lobby will not allow us to do it.
It's all about the money when it comes down to it, isn't it, sometimes?
Yes.
Or the support that you get from an organization of that size.
Yeah, I mean, they have a budget. The NRA has an annual budget of $350 million. That went up $100 million after Sandy Hook because they were able to leverage that tragedy to sell guns. And, you know, they also have television stations and magazines and radio programs and all of those kinds of things that they need to sustain themselves. But, you know, we just need enough money to fight them. We need enough money to do ballot initiatives at the state level and to create this grassroots army that can show up in state houses where, you know, before it was just an NRA lobbyist testifying for dangerous bills. And now we have an army of moms and women who show up and say, nope, not in my community. And that has made all the difference.
Absolutely. I mean, you guys have made a huge difference, this, you know, like you said, in 4 years. You know, I would dare say, I mean, I would say you guys are the largest group of your type. Would that be a correct assumption?
We are. You know, we've only been around, as I mentioned, just over 4 years. I started Moms Demand Action the day after the Sandy Hook shooting. And then we became the grassroots arm of Every Town for Gun Safety. And together we have more than 3 million supporters. The NRA has been around for decades, and they only have 5. So we are catching up rapidly. And we have tens of thousands of active volunteers that we can turn out very easily to make calls, to send emails, to show up at meetings. You know, we're having a lobby day in Arkansas today, our first ever lobby day in Arkansas, and we met with the governor who has not necessarily been on our side on this issue. But, you know, that is where we start to chip away and make a difference is when lawmakers see us show up and they know that women are the majority of the voting public. So what we care about matters to them. And it is all about showing up and being vocal and being vigilant and using your voice to say, you know, this is not acceptable and this is a danger to me and to my family.
And you know, and the beautiful thing is, you know, you don't have to have a background in lobbying or whatever. I mean, it's with you guys, it's like it's boots on the ground, you know, because I try to help as much as I can in Missouri. And, you know, it's a very pretty, you know, easy but yet complex system how you guys are able to literally within a couple of days just kind of like get the troops to where we need to be. And I think it's amazing work that what you guys do. And you already kind of touched on that, but I guess kind of something I wanted to ask is, you know, what happens now after the post-Women's March, and how's Moms Demand Action is ready and already moving on the ground in their local communities? You mentioned Arkansas.
Yep. Yeah, we were very involved in the Women's March because gun violence is a women's issue, and a lot of times we don't think of it that way as a country. You know, the majority of mass shooting victims are women. The majority of mass shootings actually involve domestic violence and occur in private residences, so not as the NRA would have you believe, so-called gun-free zones. Women are 16 times more likely to be shot and killed than women in other developed nations. And, you know, domestic violence is a huge issue in this country because we arm abusers so easily. So that was a major reason why we participated in the march. We had hundreds of volunteers alone in D.C., but thousands across the country at all the sister marches. And we're taking that momentum forward now and making sure that gun violence as a women's issue remains a priority with this Congress. And that we are educating people about why this issue is important to women. And, you know, I think the Women's March was an important moment in time, but it means nothing if we don't channel that energy into movements. And so, you know, I would encourage anyone who's passionate about any issue, this is the issue I'm passionate about, but there's so much to get involved in that already exists on the ground. And if you can show up and be at a march, then you can join your local chapter of Moms Demand Action in your state, and you can show up at a meeting at the State House for Lobby Day, or you can show up at a house party for Moms Demand Action, or you can, you know, I spent my morning making calls to my members of Congress about Betsy DeVos. You know, sometimes it's just as simple as making a phone call.
Right. And, you know, I don't think a lot of people realize on our show, a couple of weeks ago, we had a real big, it was, you know, kind of right before all the ACA mess was going on and how they were wanting to mess with it. And we got so many people just by, you know, continuously tweeting out, we need you to call, this is what we need you to do. And, you know, from what I heard, we, you know, which I think he just takes it off the hook. But people were having a hard time getting through to Ryan because so many people were calling. And that definitely, you know, it may seem like a little step to those people, but it's a huge step.
Well, I mean, if you look at just the way that Collins and Murkowski voted on DeVos, they both said it was because they received tens of thousands of phone calls. But pertaining to gun violence, you know, I remember when in April after the shooting at Sandy Hook, you know, we were urging Congress to vote to close the background check loophole on private gun sales. And Heidi Heitkamp, who is a Democrat in North Dakota, she's a senator there, she said she voted against closing the background check loophole because she received so many calls from the other side. And, you know, we were only 4 months in the making at that point and didn't have the same kind of calling and turnout power that we do now. But, you know, that was really a wake-up call because these calls do matter, whether you think they do or not, whether you think your one phone call matters. When it's added to tens of thousands of other calls, it does matter. And I hope what the Trump election does is to make everyone feel like their vote matters, like their voice matters, and that being silent is being complicit.
Yeah. You know, it's like the organization ACT UP when that was beautiful grassroots movement. I can't talk today. They, you know, when the AIDS epidemic came out, and you know, their logo was silence equals death, and it's so true. You know, I mean, sitting on your hands is not doing what it needs to be done. You know, you don't have to go out to all these marches. You may be a shy person, but you can make phone calls. I mean, just for people that are at home too, I want to tell you that you can be, even if you're not a mom, you can be involved. I call myself Aunt in Action.
That's right. Yes. It's Mothers Against Drunk Driving. You don't have to be a mom or a woman.
Right.
My favorite thing is to see men show up in Moms Demand Action shirts. It's the best.
Absolutely. That's definitely a beautiful thing. So, anything we need to be aware of, that, like, at the state legislative level that, you know, our
well,
listeners
guns in
can
schools,
help you with?
You know,
or?
Is a major issue right now. In addition to what we think are going to be Donald Trump's executive orders, we know that Congress, you know, is thinking about trying to overturn Gun-Free Schools Act via legislation. And then we have five states right now, including Missouri, that are trying to put guns in K-12 schools. It's something we fight every single year. We defeated the NRA in 14 out of 15 states trying to put guns in schools last year. And, you know, that is a major issue for us, not just guns in K-12 schools, but also guns on campus.
Right.
You know, what a lot of people don't realize is that the NRA actually opposed guns in schools in 1999 is when they changed that position. They testified and then started to realize that they were selling more guns to fewer people. And in order to protect the profit margins of gun manufacturers, they needed to open up the customer base for guns. And one way to do that is to make guns everywhere and sort of inoculate people to guns. And so that is why we see them trying now to put guns on campus and put guns in K-12 schools and sell guns to women. All of these things are basically a marketing ploy. They are not a public service announcement in any way. They're just
right.
an attempt to sell guns.
Help with the bottom line is, you know,
yep.
What I've always said about the NRA. I mean, I've never supported them, and I mean, I have a pretty staunch stance. I mean, Second Amendment is in there. Yeah, I believe that it should be upheld, but I also believe when that amendment was made. I mean, they didn't take into account that we were going to have machine guns and these, you know, crazy things available to harm people with. And it was more of a, okay, this is to help us hunt, help us get food, you know, fight some wars. But, it just didn't mean what it means today.
Well, you know, and again, I would point out that the vast majority of NRA members are responsible gun owners. In fact, a Republican pollster found that 74% of all NRA members support laws like background checks. You know, what we're seeing is the radicalization of the leadership of the NRA. They have been pulled so far right, almost like the Tea Party pulled Congress to the right. Other gun groups, Other gun lobbying organizations have pulled the NRA so far to the right. I mean, just in the last couple of years, you know, the NRA went from saying open carry was downright weird to supporting it. And that is because they keep getting pulled further and further to the right. And it's that extremism that we oppose, that we do not believe is in keeping with, you know, the Second Amendment or with the responsibilities that go along with the Second Amendment.
You're so right. I know that you guys have lots of different, organizational efforts, you know, happening right now. And I'm going to be asking you throughout the interview until we're done. And, you know, tell us about the Be Smart campaign and the educators organizing that effort.
Yeah, so when we talk about the responsibilities that go along with gun rights, something that's very strange in this country is that we do not often hold gun owners responsible or accountable for safely storing their firearms. And, you know, you were talking about terrorism statistics. More toddlers kill Americans in a month than are killed by terrorists here in this country. So that is a bizarre and unique American problem, and it's because there's the NRA. I mean, if you look at their responsible storage protocol, it is not what we would consider responsible storage. We believe guns should be locked, unloaded, and stored separately from the ammunition, and that is, you know, particularly when there are children. around. More than 2 million American children live in households where guns are not responsibly stored. And in 1.7 million of those households, that means those guns are unlocked and loaded and easily accessible. And, you know, this is a problem in many ways. One, children are shooting themselves and other children. Two, they are taking these guns and committing crimes, particularly school shootings. And three, they're committing suicide with these guns. So the other bizarre part of this is that only 28 states have any kind of law requiring adults to responsibly store their firearms. So, and even these laws are incredibly lax, right? So if you were to leave your loaded gun on your dresser and a child got a hold of it and injured themselves or someone else, that might be a $400 fine, right, as opposed to actually being charged with criminal activity. So these are laws that we are working to strengthen. Believe it or not, Florida has the strongest what we call child access prevention laws in the country. And the incidences, I would not have either, but it has definitely impacted what we never call them accidental shootings. We always say unintentional, because an accident implies you've done everything you can to prevent something and it happened anyway.
Right.
These are unintentional shootings because you did not do everything you possibly could. You didn't want it to happen, but you didn't prevent it from happening. So we see much fewer and a big decrease in unintentional shootings in Florida since they passed stronger laws. And so back to our Be Smart program, what we do is go around the country, our chapters, and they go into homes, and they go into PTA meetings, and they go into churches, and they have discussions about what is responsible storage. We're fortunate to have Melissa Joan Hart partner with us on this program. She's actually a Republican who was very impacted by Sandy Hook because she lives in Connecticut. And it's really as simple as saying, regardless of whether you're a gun owner or not, these are questions you need to ask when your kids go on a play date or when they go to a relative's home. And it's all about, how do you store your gun? Do you have guns? How do you store them? And deciding, you know, whether you feel like the answer is safe enough for your children. And we've done more than 500 presentations so far just since starting this program less than 2 years ago.
That's amazing. You guys just do so much, and I'm in awe of what all. Just, yeah, from someone who, talks about it, of course, on the show, but, you know, who also gets involved, I'm just, you know, blown away with the organization, organizational skills, and, you know, we've got people, we actually have international listeners, and, you know, we get people asking us, you know, that are international listeners to, you know, why is this such a big, you know, issue? And, you know, I can't imagine what it looks like from their side. You know, some are like, I'm scared to come to America, and parts of me want to go, yeah, I would be too, you know. Well, we talked about the Be Smart campaign, and, you know, I guess sometimes I felt as though the program lobby has had the upper hand in the marketing branding war, as they've often, you know, successfully persuaded, like we were talking about, you know, many that believe in gun control, if you will, and, you know, and it includes the taking of firearms from law-abiding citizens. It's, you know, kind of how they scare people. You know, Obama was going to take everybody's guns, and, well, guess what? That didn't happen. And you had mentioned, too, you know, like that old adage of guns don't kill people, people kill people. you know, what specifically do you feel we can do to help reverse that trend and finally gain the upper hand in this debate? Because it feels like we are definitely making, some tremendous ground, but I know a lot needs to be done still.
Yeah, I mean, when I talk to people, you know, I think they have they've bought into the gun lobby's talking points. You know, there's no chance, and the sort of the train has left the station. We know that's not true. You know, in this last election, where we saw significant losses among Democrats, guns actually was a winning issue. We won 3 out of 4 ballot initiatives to pass background checks and to also require something called emergency risk protection orders around guns. And so we were very successful in our ballot initiatives, and we are actually getting ready to pass background checks right now in the state of New Mexico, which will be the 20th state to pass background checks, and more than 50% of America will live in states that have done what Congress hasn't. So, you know, that we are winning legislatively in the states, and then we are also passing important new policies in corporate boardrooms. We've gotten companies like Starbucks and Chipotle and Target and others to say no open carry inside our stores. So all of this is about building momentum. It's actually very similar to marriage equality. If you recall, marriage equality activists went to Congress and said, you know, we want equality. And what they got in return was DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act. And they sort of said, okay, well, that's not what we wanted. And they pivoted and went to the states and companies and built this groundswell of momentum. And we're doing the same thing. Now, I will tell you, it would have been nice if Hillary Clinton had become president, because thanks to Moms on the Ground, she made this a part of her policy platform. You know, she was going to not only stop the NRA in its tracks, but she was going to move forward with common sense gun laws. We'll get there again eventually. But for right now, at a federal level, we are playing defense. And it's incredibly important. You know, just because you may not pass something new, there's a lot of danger in allowing things to be passed that are bad, or to undo already existing laws. So we have learned over the last 4 years to be David to the NRA's Goliath. We beat them a lot. And, you know, that's why you heard from so many trolls about me being on the program. You know, if we weren't winning, we wouldn't be so hated by gun extremists. And so it is incredibly important that everyone listening goes to momsdemandaction.org or texts us, join, the word join, to 64433. And by doing that, we will contact you and get you involved in the chapter in the state where you live and tell you different ways that you can get active on this issue. Because just like we see Americans playing defense right now on Obamacare, we have to do the same exact thing on guns.
Definitely. And, you know, I guess the, you know, a big community that you've had alluded to marriage equality. I mean, I'm a big part, you know, a big part of me is a member of the LGBTQ, you know, community, and we're finding ourselves playing defense too. You know, because it's like, well, he says he's not going to do anything, but then his actions are saying otherwise. And I mean, we're having to get really, you know, in just in touch with what's going on and be ready on a moment's notice. And I think that's what a lot of people are finding themselves having to do. You know, and I think a beautiful thing that's happening, and I've said this a bunch on the show, is that, you know, there are a lot of minorities that maybe would not have worked together. But in the last year or so, you have seen, like, this groundswell of, you know, minority groups come together, kind of making this huge majority group. And I think it's really on the rise now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that organizing is something incredibly important. When it comes to gun violence prevention, it impacts all different organizing groups. For example, you know, after the shooting in Orlando at a gay nightclub, we saw so many LGBTQ activists come together. You know, I'm the mom of a daughter who is gay in college. And so, you know, that really impacted me in particular. And my daughter, Emma, was with me at parades and different things around the country after that shooting to bring attention to the fact that we have to make sure we're not arming people who are hateful. And we make it so easy for people in this country to get guns, even if they've had a criminal record or they're dangerously mentally ill. And by arming them, we make this hate deadly. So I feel like gun violence prevention intersects with so many different activist groups in this country. And we're finally seeing that all build. And, you know, if there is a silver lining to the Trump election and to the Trump presidency, I think it's that we see people realizing the need to mobilize, regardless of their political party, that when you make a lot of noise, when you take action, when you show up, it matters in a democracy.
Right.
And I think for far too long, you know, people were silent. 90 million people didn't vote. So hopefully people
right.
are going to see in the next 4 years how incredibly important it is to use that privilege.
And you're exactly right. It is a privilege that people fought and die for. And, you know, you were talking about Orlando. I mean, it just completely rocked my world. I mean, any time something like that happens, but the fact now that somebody just came into a gay nightclub just because we're gay, it was really tough for me. It took a while for me to bounce back from that one. And, you know, I mean, Americans are dying because of hate. And, you know, I mean, it's been past time for all of us to demand Congress take action to prevent gun violence in America. And how is Moms in Demand specifically going about battling hate crimes?
Well, I think it goes back to our fundamental effort, which is to pass background checks in many ways. Mm-hmm. When you pass background checks, you see these kinds of crimes decrease. And far too often we make it easy for someone with a dangerous criminal record or with mental illness to go online and buy a gun or to buy a gun at a gun show with absolutely no background check. I mean, I think the Charleston loophole is egregious in this country. And for those who don't know, in the shooting in Charleston where 9 worshipers were shot and killed while praying by a white supremacist, that man was not supposed to be able to buy a gun. But in this country, there is a law, and again, this was a part of the law that the NRA fought for. It basically says if someone gets a background check through a licensed gun sale, if that background check doesn't clear within 3 days, the seller can go ahead and sell the gun. And in this case, the reason it was taking 3 days was because it was very complicated, and you know, this guy did have a background check that prohibited him from buying a gun, but he got it anyway, and it was the gun he used to kill these Black Americans because he was a racist.
Right.
And so, you know, just closing some of these loopholes and tightening up the laws, a lot of people don't realize that, yes, federal law prohibits domestic abusers from having guns, but they define a domestic abuser incredibly narrowly, basically your spouse or your ex-spouse. Most people who are shot in domestic violence situations are now being shot by dating partners because of the change in demographics and the age of marrying. So they also don't include stalkers. And so we're having to go into states and we're tightening these laws and we're saying, okay, we should broaden the definition of what a domestic abuser is. And now we have to go in and change the laws so that we make sure a domestic abuser, their guns that they have are removed, and that they're prohibited from buying guns in the future. Again, something the NRA has fought against forever. It's complicated and it's nuanced, but it is the difference between life and death, and that's why it's so incredibly important.
You're absolutely right. I mean, I'm sitting here, I'm like, what else can I say to that? I mean, you've put it out there beautifully. We still have a little time, and I saved some of these questions, in case we had questions at the end, because I always like asking people in the leadership positions like yourself, what would you say is the, who would you say, I should say, is the one nominee on Trump's cabinet who really scares you the most?
Well, you know, right now I would say anyone who is listening, I implore you to call your member of Congress, your senator, about Betsy DeVos. I think it's concerning that she has said she thinks guns in schools is fine and that if Donald Trump wanted that, she would concur. That is something that very few parents and police and faculty and even students agree with. And so to put guns in K-12 schools is incredibly dangerous, and the fact that she supports that to me automatically makes her a non-starter.
Yeah, agree. As far as the votes go, I try so hard to put myself in on the other side and try to like see, okay, what were they thinking when they said this? And I just can't find an answer, what does she really hope to accomplish with guns in schools?
Well, I mean, I just think it's become such a polarized issue that it's almost like if you are part of the Trump administration that you are going to support the NRA's endgame. And again, that is in part because the NRA was the largest outside donor to Donald Trump. They literally have a seat at the table, as we saw yesterday, and they are going to push their agenda. And I don't think there are many people that Donald Trump would approve of or choose if they went against that dogma. So, it's not surprising to see, but it's also incredibly dangerous and frightening and not where we wanted this country to go.
Yeah. Another question along the same lines. We could be here all day for this one, but just a few points. What scares you the most out of a Trump presidency?
Well, obviously the fact that the NRA has such a big part of, is going to play such a big role in his administration. And, we had hoped that the election of Hillary Clinton would be the beginning of the end for NRA lobbyists.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, they've been sort of empowered. And, I think there are a lot of truly dangerous laws that they want to pass and get accomplished, and that includes something called concealed carry reciprocity, which basically says the lowest common denominator to get a gun license would apply to the entire country. So one of the easiest places to get a gun is in Virginia. You just go online. It takes very little to get a gun. And in fact, there are some cases where you can have misdemeanors or different things in your background and still get a gun. That person would be able to take their gun into any state that has worked very hard to have strong gun laws, states like California and Massachusetts and New York. So if you get your gun in Virginia, you would then be allowed to just take it into Times Square. And that's something that concerns a lot of lawmakers and police, and it's something the NRA has had written and waiting on the shelf for a long time until they got the right president in place to help them usher that through. We expect that will be something that we'll have to play defense on. But, there are a lot of different things they can do on a federal level. We know they're going to continue their state work. But, I think the biggest danger is just that they have been empowered instead of being drained of their power. And it will require us to really be vigilant and be on defense for the next maybe 4 years.
You're exactly right. And, what really scares me is that he just keeps making these executive actions. Like, nobody, we're not being, you know, you're not seeing it discussed on the floor of the House. And it frightens me that he's, you know, that he's getting away with it. You know, he's probably what, I think last count had done 10 executive actions already.
Well, there are more coming, but, you know, I mean, this is exactly what they criticized President Obama for. And apparently that's become the new rule of law, which is to just sign an executive order. You know, these executive orders can be overturned. I mean, we're seeing attempt to overturn things that Obama did. They're not laws, so they're easier to overturn and maybe mean less. But the intent is still there. And, you know, we will see what comes out about guns, but I would expect that we will see something. And again, Sean Spicer implied that yesterday at a presser.
Yeah, talking about somebody that scares me. That guy. You know, whenever I stumble across, you know, a gun rights debate, I seem to always come across, you know, at least that one person who attempts to refute a pro-gun control individual with, you know, well, what about Chicago? That's proof laws don't work. What do you have to say? I mean, I know what I say, and it can be very sarcastic, but, you know, what do you have to say to people who make such an argument?
Well, I get that tweet about a dozen times a day. It's the Groundhog's Day of tweets. And, you know, the reality is that, yes, Illinois has pretty good gun laws, not the best. They have pretty good gun laws. But as someone who lived in Indianapolis for many years, I can tell you that parts of Chicago are literally across the street from Indiana. And each state's gun laws, each city's gun laws, are only as strong and as effective as the neighboring city and state, right? So guns cross state lines as easily as cars do. And so if you live in Chicago, all you have to do is get in a truck and drive across the state line, which, again, is only a matter of minutes, load up your truck at a gun show, and go right back and sell those guns to criminals or prohibited purchasers or dangerous people. And that's what happens all the time in Chicago. So if you look at the origin of the majority of crime guns in the city of Chicago, they are coming from Indiana. And that is because the governor of Indiana, now the vice president, was the NRA's best friend. He was the keynote speaker at every annual meeting, and he passed incredibly dangerous laws that enable dangerous people to get guns. And, you know, it's a state where we see actually the gun violence increase in Indiana is off the charts every year. It tops the year before. And that is a byproduct of those laws. And so much of the situation that has been created in Chicago is because of gun trafficking. And it's easy to look at Chicago and pretend it's an island, but it's not.
Exactly. I have one more question, and then I want to give you a couple of minutes to share again as far as what they can do to help you, where they can find you, the Twitter, Instagram, all that good stuff. But this is just one of those kind of out there questions that, you know, if there is one piece of gun legislation you'd like to see passed, what would it be and why?
Well, I mean, you know, that's what we've been talking about for the last hour. I really would like, we would really like for Congress to close the loophole that allows the private sale of guns with no background check. You know, we have it on license sales. There's no reason to close it on private sales. We should, but there's no reason not to. And they're not doing it just because, you know, the gun lobby wants to make it as easy to put guns in the hands of anyone, anywhere, anytime, no questions asked. You know, I think that it's very ironic that lawmakers who call themselves pro-life do not believe that closing the background check is part of that platform or agenda. So that is when we look at the states. Yeah, when we look at the states that have done what Congress hasn't, which is to close the background check loophole, we see gun violence significantly reduced, almost cut in half. And again, that's shooting of police and shootings by domestic abusers and mass shootings. And so we know that these laws work. And really, again, we talked about how silence is complicity. That by not passing these laws that we know will save lives, we are allowing 33,000 Americans to be shot and killed every single year.
My goodness. Those are disgusting numbers. Well, we're getting close to the end of the hour, and I wanted to make sure, well, first, thank you so much for coming on. This has been
absolutely
really enlightening. I feel like we could talk about a subject daily and still not get to everything that needs to be done. You know that our show is here for you guys, and we have a pretty good crowd that listens, and they're the type of people who would be inclined to, you know, help you guys. And so for our listeners, would you give, you know, give the like the text number and the website address again, and, you know, how they can help financially and where they can follow you? I would appreciate that.
Yep, if you go to momsdemandaction.org, you can donate and you can join, and you can read more about who we are and what we do and what we believe. We have a Twitter handle, which is @momsdemand, and my Twitter handle is @ShannonRWatts. And you can also text the word join, J-O-I-N, to 64433. And someone will reach out to you where you live and tell you how you can get involved.
And you don't have to be a mom.
Do not have to be a mom.
I have the, you know, we have some step-down levels, and I'm going to start Ants Demand Action. So,
yeah.
You know, if you're someone who gives a damn about what's happening to the, you know, kids especially, you need to be a part of this group. And they definitely need our help, and you know, and they're just if you're looking for a group to donate to, this is it. This is it. And I've donated before, and definitely plan on doing some more again. And Shannon, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Coming on, I'm so glad it's finally worked out. Because we've talked so much about, you know, you coming on, and we finally got it worked out. So
yeah, well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, and take care. Let us know if there is anything you need us to do. You know, get word out about something. Just shoot me an email anytime, and you know, it's like I tell a lot of groups we're involved with. You know, we're your free advertisement, and you know, we are helping, you know, just happy to help. So thank you again for coming on.
Great, thank you.
All right, thanks, Shannon.
Bye.
And that was Shannon Watts from Moms Demand Action. Such an exciting group of women involved with that group, and I really encourage you all to get to know them. You know, even if it's $5, I mean, send them $5, because I mean, they're having to go up against money grubbers like, you know, NRA, and I've been getting a lot of hate messages from people who were mad I wouldn't take the calls, but I had already decided that I wasn't taking calls today because we had already gotten stupid hate mail towards Shannon or towards me, and I just wasn't going to entertain it. You know, I don't want to give them a platform at all, and Shannon has way too much to talk about than spending her time trying to, I mean, you can't fix stupid, and, you know, I just wasn't going to use our time like that, and so that is that. So I hope you'll tune in tomorrow. Craig and I will be back together again. And again, I appreciate you guys so much being there for me through all of these surgeries and everything else that has occurred. It has been tough, but you know, you guys have really lifted me up, and I really appreciate you more than you'll ever know. So until tomorrow, our show is 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So that would make it 3 Central, 2 Mountain, 1 Pacific. So I think I got that right. God only knows. Yeah, 4 Eastern, 3 Central, 2, 1. Okay, yeah, it's right. Anyway, you take care. Let us hear from you, and we'll talk soon. Peace.